Hello and welcome to the Health Report with me, Norman Swan. Today we'll have that interview on difficult conversations with your doctor that I didn't get to last week. A recently recognised gene that multiplies a woman's risk of breast cancer by 10, and more evidence supporting how important it is to call an ambulance and get to an emergency department as soon as possible if you think you or someone you're with is having a stroke. Stroke is common, so this is something we all need to be aware of. Last week, The Lancet published the largest and most detailed analysis ever of using a clot-busting, a thrombolysis drug versus placebo in nearly 7,000 people having a stroke. The results should settle the controversy over this medication and showed that time is critical. In other words, the sooner the better. One of the pioneers in Australia of integrated acute stroke services is Professor Chris Levi of the John Hunter Hospital in Newcastle.
Well, Norman, I think this will probably be the last major meta-analysis of stroke thrombolysis against placebo. We have now over 6,700 patients from 9 randomised trials comparing the clot-busting drug alteplase against placebo.
So just to be clear now, when people talk about meta-analyses or systematic reviews, they usually talk about averaging out the results of the studies, whereas this one has taken all the data out of the individual trials and reanalyzed it by patients, regardless of which trial they were on, to try and get rid of any errors that might have been in individual trials.
Yes, it's the most powerful way of looking at the totality of the evidence. We call this an individual patient meta-analysis.
So what's the bottom line here? Just take us through the findings, because the big issue and the controversy has been how much benefit there is versus how much risk.
Yes, and this clot-busting treatment for acute stroke does carry a small risk. It's a very strong blood-thinning treatment, and when it's given to people, there is a small risk of bleeding. And in stroke, that risk is largely bleeding into the stroke itself, into the area of the brain that's damaged generally. However, you have an area of brain that if you do nothing, if you just leave it, the odds are it will succumb and leave the person paralysed or unable to speak or with some major impairment. So the net benefit, that is the chance of someone effectively being cured from the treatment or being left with virtually no symptoms at all, is increased in relative terms by about 75% if you treat very early in the first 2 to 3 hours. And that by far outweighs a small early risk of hemorrhage and poor outcome.
The small risk you describe in absolute terms is, I think, 2 extra fatal hemorrhages in the early days per 100 people treated?
Yeah, 2.7% absolute risk in the first week of fatal brain hemorrhage versus about 0.5% in the placebo patients.
But so that sounds like a lot.
In relative terms, it is. But the flip side of the coin, that is damage from brain ischemia and the probability that you'll be left severely disabled from the stroke itself, far outweighs that small risk of the drug causing harm.
I just want to be clear of being apples with apples. So you talked about a relative benefit of 75%, so a 75% reduction in the risk of disability, so you're going to walk out virtually disability-free. So that's pretty dramatic. But we talk about an absolute risk of 2% increase with fatal hemorrhage. What's the absolute difference? And when we talk about absolute meaning, how many people would be disabled without the treatment and how many people would be free of disability per 100 with the treatment?
If you look at 100 patients treated early within the first 3 hours, the absolute benefit is 10%. So one in every 10 patients treated will effectively get up and walk out of hospital. So
a 10%, whereas they would otherwise have been disabled in the placebo
otherwise
group.
Otherwise they would have been either dead or disabled. Now, death is obviously a very bad outcome, but in many people's mind, and there's a lot of evidence to support this, the outcome that people fear most and would much rather avoid is being severely disabled and left, for instance, in a very disabled state, maybe in residential care or not being able to look after themselves.
Do you know who's at more risk of a fatal hemorrhage? And are you, as an acute neurologist, when you see somebody in the emergency department, are you able to say, this is somebody who I think is more at risk of a hemorrhage, better not have the clot busting, or you just can't tell?
It is quite difficult, but there are relative contraindications to treatment.
And what about being on aspirin? Because a lot of people are on aspirin these days to prevent something like a stroke happening.
Aspirin is not a significant contraindication at all. However, a combination aspirin plus other drugs like aspirin, drugs like clopidogrel, or the use of the anticoagulants, particularly when they're in therapeutic dose, is a contraindication.
Which is a significant number of people, because we are putting people on anticoagulants these days for atrial fibrillation to prevent stroke, and some of these people will get a stroke even though they're on anticoagulants. So they're just the people who may be at more risk of a hemorrhage if you give them a clot buster as well.
Correct. And there are some people on anticoagulants that we do and can treat, but many that we can't. And that's why this medication, although it's a very useful medication, it's not for everyone. And probably at maximum, it's going to be suitable for around 30-35% of all strokes caused by the blood clots, which is 80-90% of all strokes. So it's going to be relevant to a lot of people, but not everyone.
The timing. You also went out to 4 and 5 hours with this, or they went out to 4 and 5 hours with this analysis. But it seemed to lose significance statistically once you got beyond 3 hours in terms of the benefit.
You start to lose significance, statistical significance, a bit over 4.5. And at 5 hours, you're then not achieving net benefit for the patients. And time is a reasonable indicator of how much brain is still alive and can be salvaged if you can remove the clot and return the blood flow. But within that mix of patients out at 3 or 4 or even 5 or 6 hours, it looks from the data that there are still some people that benefit, and they're probably people who have what we call more collateral flow to the brain. So the penumbra or the area of brain that's at risk survives longer than the average patient. Identifying those patients at the moment requires advanced imaging, which is still being tested and developed in many of our stroke centres.
So in terms of the logistics now, in some ways the emergency department physicians have been right, is that this is not as simple as giving a clot buster to somebody coming in with a heart attack, where really all you need to do is to do an ECG. And if the ECG is clear, shows certain signs, so-called ST elevation, you whack in the clot buster or you get the cardiologist down to put in a catheter and open up the artery. Here you really do need a neurology team on to make what is quite a nuanced decision, but quickly.
I would agree with that, Norman, and that's been one of the challenges all along with this treatment, is it's a fairly complex clinical and radiological decision that requires a fair bit of experience and a fair bit of understanding of stroke itself. And as I said, sort of weighing up what can be relative contraindications and making a judgment about the likelihood of net benefit over risk. It's a complex decision, and I agree with many of my colleagues in emergency medicine who say, look, this is something that needs to be done in an organised fashion with an expert team. And that's what the guidelines tell us, that an acute stroke therapy should be given by an expert team with organised stroke care as the foundation.
To what extent do Australians have access to such teams across Australia at the moment?
It's improving. Organised stroke units have been rolling out gradually over the last decade or 15 years, and we have about 80 to 90 acute stroke units across the country now. Metropolitans well served, rural and regional less so, but improving. And about a third of those centres at the moment are delivering intravenous clot busting treatment. So there's still a fairly large swathe of the country where access to this treatment is difficult, and that's not just rural, it's also metropolitan.
What measures are in place to improve that?
Well, one of the real challenges we have here is what you sort of covered before, which is the need to build these teams and to educate and train them so that they feel empowered to make these decisions. And there's quite a bit of work going on at the moment around professional development, education and workforce across the universities, the colleges and the societies.
And to encourage your fellow neurologists to get out of bed because they thought they were going to a specialty which didn't have a lot of on-call.
Well, that's right. I'm glad to say that the new breed of neurologists, and there's lots of sometimes not so nice things said about our Gen Y colleagues, but I tell you, they're right on board with this, and they are the next generation of young stroke physicians, and they're training in this now. So I think the future's bright.
So you've got to get to an ED quickly for the decision to be open to you. And just remind us of the FAST mnemonic.
The FAST mnemonic is what we use in the field to identify someone who may have had a stroke. So if an observer or the person themselves notices they have a problem with their face, in terms of drops or becomes weak, their arm becomes weak, their speech becomes disturbed, either slurred or difficulty finding words, using the wrong word, muddling words up, then the T stands for time, and that means dial 000, get the ambulance activated, and the ambulance know what to do. They have protocols, so they will take you to the nearest hospital that can deliver the treatment.
Professor Chris Levi is at the John Hunter Hospital in Newcastle, and you're listening to The Health Report here on RN with me, Norman Swan.